Up from the West Indies, cradle of hurricanes, moved the Terror, a pit of low atmospheric pressure into which the air rushed from all directions to form a whirling...
That's how a newsreel by the Federal Works Project Administration described the formation of what would become the legendary hurricane of 1938. On September 21st, the day it would arrive, Beatrice Dorsey was a 10-year-old living in Plainfield, New Hampshire. And she remembers being worried about that odd sky.
The sky there above my house was green. Pretty scary, that ominous green.
Dorsey, like other New Englanders, had no way of knowing that an incredibly powerful hurricane had formed and was headed her way.
For most people, it was a complete surprise.
Plymouth State Professor Lourdes Avilas has written a new book about the hurricane. It's called Taken by Storm, 1938. She says hurricanes were rare in New England. Big storms typically came up the East Coast and courteously veered out to sea. That's what forecasters figured this storm would do.
But this one didn't, because of the meteorological patterns at the time.
This storm's power increased. It became a hurricane, late in the afternoon smashing into Long Island and then southern New England. Sustained winds of 120 miles per hour combined with high tide.
The great wind-driven waves swallowed the sandy bulwarks of the coast, washed away the pleasant beaches of Long Island's southern shore, literally changed the coastline.
It's estimated almost 700 people died.
And the huge storm surge came in some places more than 20 feet, especially in Providence, Rhode Island. They got one of the highest storm surges. And this is when most of the deaths occurred, people that were out and about.
Then the hurricane began moving inland.
Cutting a wide pathway of ruin inward from the sea, the storm piled up property damage in the hundreds of millions of dollars. The quiet dignity of colonial meeting houses was reduced to broken lumber. In one brief hour, part of the ancient beauty that was New England's heritage vanished forever.
The highest wind measured during the storm was 186 miles per hour at the Blue Hill Observatory in Milton, Massachusetts. And Avilas calculates the hurricane was advancing about 50 miles each hour.
Once they figured out it was coming, it was too late to warn the population.
And there was no way to warn people in some rural areas. Many homes didn't have radios because they hadn't yet been wired for electricity, remembers Marjorie Trombley of Gilsum. She was 11, living in a farmhouse with her mother and grandmother.
We didn't even know it was a hurricane till it was over. Imagine that, because we didn't have any electricity or anything like that.
It began with rain and some wind, but that didn't seem like a big deal to teenager Beverly Shaw. Her family lived on a bluff overlooking Woodsville. But then the windows began blowing out. The wind was so strong, it carried small stones into the house where they landed, making a pile on a table.
My mother would say, now, children, God is going to take care of us. God loves us. And the next minute she was screaming at, where's your father? And yelling her head off at the top of her lungs.
Over in Berlin, Cecile Dubois was 18 years old, working as a hairdresser at her family's home. As the winds increased, it was clear that this was something special, something bad. Her last customer of the day was too afraid to leave. They hunkered down, wondering what would happen.
And it was a very, very frightening night.
Avila says, as scary as those winds were, New Hampshire didn't get the worst of it.
Throughout northern New England, 50, 60 mile an hour winds and gusts were very common. And that's quite enough to knock down trees. But the true major hurricane winds happened in the very southern portions of the region.
Tens of millions of trees were downed in New England.
The amount of forest devastation that it caused was unimaginable to us.
Trees blocked roads, took down electric and telephone lines, and damaged buildings. Marjorie Trombley of Gilsum remembers how a friend of hers struggled to get around.
He had to walk home on top of trees, and it used to fascinate me.
And the wind also took an odd toll on a local cemetery.
Rooted up some trees, and then a lot of, not a lot, but a few caskets come up, was floating around too. And that, I never forget that.
The sudden loss of so many trees saddened people. They'd lost their landscape. When the storm was gone, what was left was a tally and recovery.
Suddenly, the ghastly wreckage of the storm gave way, and the realization came that it would not be days, but months before normal life could be resumed.
Late in 1938, the Federal Writers Project, which sent reporters and photographers throughout New England, published a 221-page report on the hurricane. Among its findings in New Hampshire, in Manchester, only 10 minutes after a group of women working at the COAS factory building left, more than half of the top floor was swept away. And in Canaan, the storm tore off a church steeple, flipped it over, and put it back upside down. The storm took a huge toll, says Lourdes Aviles.
There were 12 killed in New Hampshire, and the damages were about $12.3 million in 1938 dollars, which would be about $200 million right now.
That didn't include the huge timber loss. According to Aviles, throughout New England, almost 20,000 structures were damaged, about 26,000 automobiles were lost, about 6,000 boats lost. Railroads were out for as long as 2 weeks. 80% of the people with electricity lost it. There were at least 1,000 railroad or road washouts and 100 bridges gone. Almost 325,000 sugar maples were lost.
It's still the most devastating and the most expensive New England hurricane. Any recent New England weather event that we can think of doesn't even come close.
If that hurricane occurred today, the loss in New England would be about $40 billion to $55 billion, according to a 2008 study by Risk Management Solutions, a consulting group. Starting Friday night, Aviles has an exhibit at the Mount Washington Observatory Weather Discovery Center in North Conway about the effects of the 1938 hurricane. It's called The Great Blowdown, and it's sponsored by Plymouth State's Museum of the White Mountains. It's free and continues through the end of the year. For NHPR News, this is Chris Jensen.